You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
You can support us on Patreon and join our Discord server at patreon.com/WTFolklore.
Happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, da-ha-dee-da-ha-dee-ho. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
Crime Weaver Tyler.
I'm Gordy, art critic.
Art critic? New job.
Art critic. Well, it's... Because I know a secret about drawing perspective that the art world is paying me to keep quiet.
Who better to critique?
Yeah, well, people keep sending me their art, trying it out and being like, is this it? And then I have to keep saying, no, this, unfortunately, this does still just look like trash to me. But that is my role this week. I think that I can get away with saying a little something about it, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know how when people do perspective, they draw things farther away.
Yeah.
And just make them smaller.
Yeah, I'm always doing that.
Yeah,
yeah,
every day.
That doesn't make them farther away.
It's just making them smaller.
Yes, it just makes them smaller. It does not make them farther.
So I need to physically draw them farther away.
Look at a painting mm-hmm. of some fruit or veg on a
table.
Love
to do that.
Look at a painting.
Yeah.
And look at the things that are in that are not in the background because they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I do mean really look at it and just like notice how not farther than the foreground they are.
I see.
Everything flat.
Yeah, they are flat paintings, and I can't stress that enough. They are not actually farther away. You need to make them farther away.
Mm. I like this kind of like hotter, colder game that you're allowed to play with this.
I can't reveal it.
Doesn't quite break the rule.
I can tell you what it isn't.
Right. Sure.
And it's not drawing train tracks that go into the distance or don't go into the distance.
Even that on its own is helpful, knowing what not to do.
Yeah. Stop putting train tracks in every painting to make it look farther away, because that is not helping.
It's the first thing that I learned in high school to really beef up my artistic abilities was to put train tracks into everything as sort of a measurement of where things were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of a vital thing. If you could get away with like a creek sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a water train tracks.
Yeah, but that was considered the lazy man's way because it didn't involve having to draw in every tie.
Mm-hmm. It's no horizontal lines.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, then why even bother drawing if you're not going to put horizontal lines in?
This is only half the job.
Yeah,
you did. This is only half the wrong job you're doing.
Yeah.
You did some contours, but none of them horizontal.
Maybe it's helpful to think about horizontal perspective, though.
I certainly intend to.
Yeah, I didn't have any better plans for the day, so.
Like, what makes things farther away, horizontally speaking?
Should we just do that for the next hour?
Talk about paintings.
Talk about horizontal.
Do you know who does an okay job at this?
Who?
Rothko, I think is the right name. I'm gonna double check that. The guy who paints the rectangles?
Yeah, that's Rothko.
Rothko. He's the closest anybody's ever gotten.
To drawing horizontal?
To drawing good perspective.
Hmm.
So go have a close look at some Rothko's if you want to get closer, because he's the closest.
Well, there's my next week and a half plotted out.
don't look at the Mona Lisa. She's not smiling because her perspective is bad.
She's her smiling perspective because
was good, she'd be smiling all the way.
She's smiling because she knows something that we don't.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of mocking everyone who looks at her and is like, this is a good painting. And she's like, if only you knew.
This painting is flat. Not like a Rothko painting.
Yeah.
It's actually there's a fascinating phenomenon, a trick of the eye that museums have not been able to explain, which is if you put a print of the Mona Lisa next to a Rothko painting, she does begin to frown.
It's one of those optical illusions. Like, it's like when the eyes appear to follow you around the room.
Exactly.
The Mona Lisa's expression will actually change depending on what she's next to.
The Mona Lisa was the original art critic.
I don't even know what the Mona Lisa is near. Does she get her own room or something?
Probably.
In the museum where you see the Mona Lisa, which is in France, probably?
No, she does not, actually. She's kind of on a wall.
She's just next to all the other detritus.
Now, it is a wall on its own, kind of in the middle of a room that's got other art, if I'm remembering this correctly from many years ago. But
you all can picture the Mona Lisa in your mind as we're speaking about it, right? The painting?
Yeah. I guess, yeah.
So there's an additional fascinating phenomenon, which is if you place three or more Rothko paintings around her, the hand that she has sort of gently placed atop her other hand, resting, the fingers do begin to curl in until only the middle finger is exposed.
Oh.
Yeah.
So she's not a fan.
She doesn't like being upstaged.
She knows what's going on.
That's why she gets her own wall. I mean, she's a pretty small painting, all told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot smaller than you would expect. And I think there's maybe a complex as a result of that.
She wishes Perhaps. She was a bigger painting.
Her fame preceded her. The expectation of bigness surrounded her, and the knowledge that she does not live up to that, I think, is a constant strain on that smile.
Mm-hmm.
It's understandable.
I've heard it's much less impressive in person. Like, you go to see it and it's like, oh, is that it?
Maybe well, I think it's the part size. Of that, yeah, part of that's the size.
Sorry, go ahead.
Part of it's the size, and part of it's the fact that it's just surrounded by other unwashed tourists.
Or that its reputation has been built up so much that there is no way it could ever live up to.
Could not possibly achieve it.
Yeah.
I guess we should do a folktale. We've been real good about rambling lately. So you guys want a folktale?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Hit me.
This week we're going to be reading Johnny Reed's Cat.
Finally.
Yes, a cat story. Yes, which Cricket celebrated with by having a hairball right before we had to record that I had to clean up.
That's festive.
Yeah. So this one's from the UK, from Charles J. Tibbetts, collection of folklore and legends of England and Scotland, published in 1894. This particular reading is sourced from castelvolante.com. And suggested by Millipedish, who I am now dubbing the fate I cannot escape, since they done tricked me into a hat trick before. You two ready for Johnny Reed's Cat?
Can't wait to learn about this cat.
I bet you can't.
Love the cat.
All right. So, the story starts off with the narrator just kind of musing on the nature of cat.
You got kind of got some samples for us?
Yeah, and I'll read the story here in a moment.
Okay.
But I'm just amused by the fact that cat-based media must start with a monologue about how cat is.
Yeah, you just gotta preface it.
Yeah, like, you can't just go straight into cat. You do have to, like, naming of cats at the beginning.
For those unaware.
So, cats are weird, right?
I've heard that.
They know more than a simple beast ought to know. And it's
that
pretty
is
strange.
True.
Yeah. There's that cat there you've been looking at. You know the one.
I know the one.
Mine?
That will... This just says there's that cat there you've been looking at. Use of the second person perspective in storytelling.
Especially in folktales.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that they were capable of that.
This one's breaking all kinds of boundaries. That cat will stand at a door on its hind legs with its front paws on the handle, trying, like a Christian, to open the doors and meowing like he's talking.
Using its God-given right to open a door.
Tough life, everybody else leads who cannot open doors, I guess.
Yeah, any other faith is opens doors very differently, but cats specifically attempt to open it like a Christian.
Buddhism is all about that push-pull.
Yeah.
Not that knob turn, like Christ was.
I personally have to consult the positioning of the moons before I can know which direction to turn the handle.
I prefer saloon, honestly.
Just kind of burst through it. They're fun.
Yeah.
So if you get a house, Tyler, are you going to replace them all with saloon doors?
Mm-hmm. Including exterior doors.
They're not great at doing some of the things that doors do.
My heating and cooling is going to be extremely expensive, but think of all the money I'm going to save on doors.
Yeah, on just cutting down on raw door real estate.
Just door real estate.
Which really, really adds up. A lot of people don't do that math when they're thinking about buying a house, but it
adds up.
It's
adds
enormous.
And, like, you can sell tickets to the cowboy shoot-em-ups you'll be inviting into your house at all times. You'll never be lonely, because there's always going to be some stranger in town entering your home.
For whomst I can slide a bottle of milk down a large table.
That's just how you greet everybody. Yeah. You have a bar that goes to your front door. You just slide a tall glass of milk and a little bowl of hot fries way down.
My house looks like the arcade game Tapper. A number of tables that I slide things down to various patrons.
And you only accept old-timey coins.
Well, back to this cat.
Yeah.
Who does Christian door opening and not saloon door opening.
This is still the one that we know.
Yeah, he's a London cat.
Oh, I don't know this cat. I've never been there.
A London cat.
He's a London cat. Mm. Having been brought to me by a cousin who lives there.
Yeah.
Do I know this cousin?
Cousin lives in London. Brings people cats.
It's not sounding familiar.
The cat's name is Gilpin.
It's a good cat name.
That's a good name.
Yeah, pretty solid cat name.
I'm into that.
It's very much like a Stardew Valley random generated name, which is my favorite.
100%.
Like, why name your own animals when you can click the little dice roll? I have a goat named Chilla right now.
Why name anything?
Gilpin's pretty smart, but it's like, I don't want you to get mixed up about this. It's not like London cats are cleverer than country ones or anything like that. Just, you know, just Gilpin happens to be a London cat, and he happens to be pretty smart.
Smarter than the average London cat? Like, is Gilpin exceptional in some way, or just...
Like, he's just
smarter
smart.
Than we would think.
Yeah, he's just pretty smart. He can try to open doors like a Christian. He goes to church every Sunday to unlock the mystery of the handle.
Not to enrich his faith, but to study the doors.
Correct, yes. I mean, that is that's kind of cat heaven, right? Mm-hmm. Like, getting to the other side of door that is close to them. That is cat paradise.
Dangerous prospects.
Gilpin might even be a relative of Johnny Reed's own Tomcat. You know that one, right? From the title?
I don't. I wish you would tell me a story about it at any point.
Wait, you don't know about this cat?
I don't know Johnny Reed's cat. Can you help me? Do you know?
Okay, fine. We'll tell you. This is an old tale that they have in the North Country. And it's true enough, although folk might not believe it.
No, I'm sold. You told me it's true. It's true. I'll just figure out a way to make it true if I need to.
Tyler over there engineering cat tricks. So Johnny Reed was a sexton up Newcastle way. And he and his wife had a cat who was pretty chill, save for a few of the normal cat tricks that all cats play sometimes. You know, like, 2 a.m., time to run real fast. Mm-hmm. Pooped in a box, time to run real fast.
Carmen.
What?
I need you to shoot straight with me on this one.
Okay.
More so than ever before.
I make no promises. Ask away.
Our friendship is at a precipice right now.
Mm-hmm.
Does this cat get a name? Jenny Reed's cat.
Iffy.
Iffy.
Is that the name, or is that what you're saying to me?
That's not the answer I expected.
I'm saying, like, he maybe gets a name, maybe doesn't. It is all up to interpretation.
Okay. Because you just told us about a fucking hypothetical cat that got a name.
Yeah, Gilpin. Gilpin, the narrator's cat, gets a name.
I don't know if I can deal with that. This cat better get a fucking name.
So this cat's all black, except for one white paw, and he seemed kind of normal for cat. Did cat things. Sit in box, knock thing off shelf,
mm-hmm.
Put butt in face in the middle of night.
Scream.
You know, cat things. Scream. And the cat had been with him for some years when a strange thing occurred. Johnny was coming home late from a churchyard where he had been digging a grave for a person who had died rather suddenly. So in case you're wondering why he was out so late digging a grave, it's not because he's a murderer. It's because this person was unexpectedly dead. So they didn't have
And they time. Needed a whole stat.
Yeah, they didn't have the time to, like, better schedule a grave digging.
Not only was this tragedy sudden, but it does need to be contained.
Yeah, very quickly, because funeral is next day. The story does go a very long way to explain certain things that don't need explaining. I did cut some of that.
It does, yeah, it is explaining the things that its shirt should also already be explaining.
So he hadn't gone far when he came to a gate by the roadside that had a strange shadow about it, in which Johnny saw what looked like a lot of little gleaming fires dancing around. Some moving, some standing steady, like flashes of light from little windows and buildings on fire inside.
So some will-o'-the-wisps.
Johnny's not easily frightened. So he's like, hello, what's this then?
What about his cat, though?
This is a weird thing. Cat's not present.
Okay.
We're using cat ownership as a time measurement device.
Okay.
So he walked straight up to the gate, and the shadow got deeper, and the fires got brighter the nearer he came to it. When he got right up to the gate, he discovered that the shadow was 9 black cats. Some of them were sitting, and some of them were dancing, and the lights were the flashes from their eyes. So as you do when you see a group of cats.
Cats vibing in a graveyard.
We're near somewhere, a graveyard. Yeah, somewhere between graveyard and home. So his first thought is to scare them off. No loitering cats.
What? Okay. Does he throw the old boot at them?
And he yells at them. But if you've ever yelled at a cat to stop doing something, you know they for sure don't give a shit about that.
You should know that that only hastens their activity.
Yeah, Cricket double times her plastic chewing every time I yell at her for it. It's just like, wait, what?
If Gots is slowly leaning in to lick a plate that I don't want her to, and I say something about it, she immediately just, like, face plants into it.
It's weird.
Because she knows that it will soon no longer be present on the table. So the time to act is now.
Mine's perfect and always listens to me.
Yours knows that you have knowledge beyond normal human kenning, so
mm-hmm.
He's careful.
It is respect, but it is also a little bit fear.
Yeah. As we all feel for Gordy.
It is respect colored by fear.
So I guess this fellow suffers from somewhat fragile masculinity because cats not listening to him telling them what to do takes him immediately to violent escalation.
Should hang out with Glooscap.
Oh, you're not gonna listen to me? I'll soon scatter you, you ugly varmin.
They should share some drinks and cry about how babies and cats don't listen to them.
Yeah, they should. Just start a little therapy group for people who aren't listened to by others who have no reason to listen to them. So he looks around for a stone.
By strong-willed small creatures. With no grasp of their language.
Why can't I just be surrounded by puppy dogs who always listen to what I'm saying? Unless they're trying to eat something I don't want them to. So he's looking for a stone. It's too dark to see one. And a voice calls out, "Johnny Reed." And he answers, "Hello," which is his catchphrase. "Who's that that wants me?" And the voice repeats his name.
Wait, that's his catchphrase?
Hello? So
he starts most of his sentences with hello.
It's not a great catchphrase. Can we workshop this?
What's a good catchphrase that brings about surprise but not fear? Fearless surprise.
Surprise but not fear. Surprise at his presence?
Anytime he's surprised on this, his exclamation is hello. That's how he expresses surprise.
Oh, I see. So help, I'm being attacked is not the direction we're looking to go in, because that would be fear.
Yeah, I don't think that gets across this character who does not fear things very easily, but does go straight to throwing stones at things.
What's
not out
this,
of fear,
then?
But a curious violence.
I have a suggestion.
Then? Okay.
Bwop.
All right, that works.
Bwop.
Bwop.
Sort of sound bwop effect.
Bwop. Who's that?
Who
wants me?
Get my paws into this.
The voice repeats his name, and he says, "Well, I'm here."
Okay.
Yeah. What?
So he looks around and he
Your
sees
move,
nobody.
Voice.
Yeah. Like. You can say my name all you want. I am present. He looks around and sees nobody, and he jokes at the cats and asks them, "One of you?" And yes, of course, answers one of the cats plainly. And Johnny...
Just like, shit, he found us out already.
And Johnny began to feel curious, because it was the first time he'd ever been spoken to by a cat. And he wasn't sure what that might lead to exactly.
One of these cats is going to end up dead.
Treasure?
I appreciate Johnny's general, like, aside from the stone throwing and easily upsetness, the general, like, kind of attitude he brings to strange situations.
Kind of a bwop energy.
Yeah, a very bwopish feel to him.
You're either foppish or you're bwopish.
I think Johnny is the most, like, Johnny is most sympathetic and interesting a character when he doesn't know what's going on, because when he does know what's going on, that's when he wants to throw rocks. So if you just keep Johnny in a constant state of confusion, he is a very pleasant fellow. But don't ever let him know what's happening.
You give him a foothold and he becomes a fucking creep.
So he doffs his cap, thinking it's perhaps best to show the cat respect, and he says, "Well, sir, what can I do for you?" "It's not much as I want with you," says the cat, "but it's better if you do what I tell you." You don't want cats to be on...
That's the most cat sentence I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't want fucking anything from you, but do what I tell you to do.
First off, food bowl, empty. I know there's food in it. I can see the bottom, so none of that food counts.
That shit's all rotten.
Secondly, window open. Birds are out there. I would like to see them.
Oh, the window fight.
Yeah, Cricket plays the window fight by just beating the blinds against the window until somebody goes over and opens them for her.
It's not quite warm enough.
And if the blinds are cracked open and I'm on the porch, then she will shove her whole head in between them and also beat on them until I open the blinds completely instead of just, like, twisting them.
So she can supervise.
Yes. That is the only way to get her to stop rhythmically hitting blinds against window. So this cat says, "Tell Dan Ratcliffe that Peggy Poison's dead."
Huh.
So John Reed's cat's name is Dan Ratcliffe.
Yeah,
Dan Ratcliffe?
Harry Potter himself.
Yeah.
"I will, sir," says Johnny, confused, because he has no idea who either of these people are. The cats vanished, and Johnny ran the rest of the way home. He gets inside, he's hot from the fright, and also from the run, and he asks his wife, "Nan, who's Dan Ratcliffe?"
Oh, Ratcliffe. Totally different guy.
Yeah, but that's close enough to be Harry Potter.
I am who's picturing this? Harry Potter.
Who is this Daniel all these kids are talking about? Why does he have guns taped to his hands?
Why are his guns akimbo?
So his wife's like, I don't have a friggin' clue. Never heard of him. I don't know if there's anyone living around by that name. And Johnny's like, man, I don't know either, but here's what happened to me. So he recounts the whole cat situation. While his cat, unnamed, sat there in front of the fire looking half asleep. And when Johnny gets around to telling his wife the message, the cat jumped to its feet and says, what? Is Peggy Poison dead? Then it's no time for me to be here. And it springs through the door and vanishes, never to be seen again.
Is that Peggy Poison?
Yeah, P-O-Y-S-O-N.
And is that a folklore way of spelling poison?
Maybe. It's not like I'm educated. I just read these things. Cat's gone, and the sexton never found the cat, and he also couldn't find Dan Radcliffe. Because he didn't watch them Harry Potter movies. But most people who've heard the story figured that Dan Radcliffe was Johnny's own cat.
Uh-huh.
No one knows who Peggy Poison was.
Dead.
Very dead.
We know that much.
The speculation is that maybe Peggy Poison was a relative or someone the cat was interested in. For it's little that we know concerning the creatures and their ways and with whom and what they're mixed up. We don't know shit about cats. The end.
Oh.
That's it. That's the story.
Yeah, okay.
What's Gilpin up to? Who knows? Still trying doors, I guess.
Is Gilpin real? Who knows?
Who is the narrator? I don't know. His dad told the story.
Was the narrator Peggy Poison?
Narrating her own death?
Narrating a ghost story?
That's a cool story. It's a cool thing to do.
This reminds me.
It's a very silly way to end a ghost story, which is, and that was me. I'm dead.
Or is it? Or is it awesome?
No, it's both. One knows who Peggy Poison is because I didn't want them to know because I'm Peggy Poison.
And I'm dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think that's a good twist.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm down for it.
Do not let Shyamalan sniff this one out. He will not handle it well.
All right, we gotta spray our anti-Shyamalan.
Do you mean that he
all over this tale?
He would not adapt this well, or he would just like personally not take it very well that someone else did a twist?
Why not both?
I went toward the latter. Like, he would just be upset that someone else did his thing.
He would initially be very upset, and then he would attempt it himself, and it would go very poorly.
Yeah, he'd snatch it away. He's like, I do the twists here. And then fuck it all up.
I'm the twisted fire starter.
I'm the writer from Lady in the Water, who will save the world.
And also the star of Lady in the Water and several of his other movies.
So that's it, huh?
That's the story. It bears some similarity to The King of Cats. Have we read that one in full here, or has it been like part of a thing? I feel like we've talked about it.
I don't remember that.
Well, in Irish folklore, there's something called the Catsey. Spelled Cat Sith.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it pronounced Ketchy also.
Ketchy. Makes sense. Because the C, like, the AOC, which I'm sure I have just pronounced terribly wrong, like the descendants of the Tuatha De Danann, which I'm sure I also pronounced very wrong.
Keep going. What else do you know how to pronounce?
Most of Gaelic. but they're all sort of related. So like Banshee is actually like originally spelled with the S-I-T-H.
With the
Yeah. Because they're all just part of that otherworldly spirit kind of category. Mm-hmm. So these are cat spirits that are black with a white spot on their chest that are about as large as a dog. Given that Cricket and Freybug are about the same size, if she had any white on her, she could maybe qualify.
Well, that can be arranged.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be easier to add a white spot than a black one. Well, I don't know about that. Maybe it's
that's incorrect.
We comparable. Had
a, growing up, I had a cat named Flake who looked almost exactly like Cricket, except all white with blue eyes. Mm-hmm. But same fur length and still pretty large. Had some Siamese in her, though, a little longer face and very, very talkative. That cat got into the garage all the time. Like, it was her favorite thing to sneak into the garage or to try and trip you on your way through. And then she'd go hang out under the car, and then she'd get oil on her fur.
Get cool tattoos.
Yeah, that we had to wash out. She also, she loved just sprinting through doors to be in different places. Because she'd do it for the back door, too, if we weren't careful. She'd just, like, zoom on out there. But mm-hmm. she didn't get far. She didn't like the feeling of grass on her paws. So she would just, like, scuttle around the house to the front door. And there was one day when we'd been doing sidewalk chalk out there, she just kind of rolled all over the sidewalk in front of the front door, and she came in multicolored.
Did you ever get the sense that she just wanted to look different?
She's like, I hate being all white. I would I want colors.
She's just trying things out.
Shockingly, she was not deaf, though most all white cats with blue eyes are born deaf.
Oh.
She was just very good at ignoring us. But that cat could hear a pounce can being opened from any place in the house. And that's how we found her when she'd disappear. It was like, just open up a pounce can and there she was. Anyway, the catsy, mm-hmm. or catchy.
Catchy.
There was a story, very, very short, about the King of Cats, where someone comes across a group of these cat spirits carrying what's the word for thing upon which corpse is placed as you're carrying it off to pallbearing? Basically, they were pallbearers. And they tell the human watcher, hey, tell Tom Tildrum that Tim Toldrum is dead.
Hmm.
And then the guy comes home, like, this one is like, what the shit, wife? Who the hell are these people? And then Tom Tildrum's like, I'm the King of Cats. Tim Tildrum's dead. That means I'm the King of Cats. And then disappears.
He's inherited the cat throne.
Yeah.
Is that why cats are mad at us all the time?
What do you mean?
We're just constantly letting them down and breaking this bad news to them of all their friends dying. They're trying to get us to convey these messages, but we're very bad at it.
I guess. Like, Tom Tildrum seems pretty chuffed.
Sure. I mean, he's a king. It was a good situation for him.
Yeah.
How chuffed was Dan Ratcliffe?
It's real hard to say, because all he says is, then it's no time for me to be here.
Yeah, so he seemed in a hurry suddenly.
I'm thinking that this is the case of some kind of, like, there's another story happening here.
There's an assassination plot?
Yeah, like a hit was put out on Peggy Poison. They've been found.
They're like, getting too close to Dan Ratcliffe.
Yeah, Peggy Poison and Dan Ratcliffe were some kind of crime team. And and they crossed the wrong cat mafia. So now he's got to get out of Dodge.
Have I talked about the movie Felidae before?
No, I don't think so.
Not that I recall.
It's an animated noir film, but cats,
right,
based
right.
on a I believe it's a German novel of the same name.
Uh-huh.
Where it is just a full on noir, but all the characters are cats, like domesticated cats. So yes. They are acting as if they are in a noir, but they are just pet cats in a uh-huh. suburb.
Uh huh.
It's kind of gruesome, and it does involve a cat sex scene, but it's an entertaining film.
But it's tasteful.
Well, it's cats, so how tasteful can it be?
None tasteful.
Anyway, that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting here now.
I want to see the Peggy Poison, Dan Ratcliffe cat crime tale. So if anyone has a folk tale about two cats committing crimes,
fucking shit up together.
Yeah. Send it our way and then, like, yell at us in a tweet that you sent it our way so that we recognize that this has happened.
Did we hear a story about a cat island, or was it a mouse island that a cat arrived on? I don't know.
There was an island, and like an old one.
It was the one with the ring.
Yeah. Like episode 15.
Maybe I'm misremembering it, but I thought it was a cat island and they brought a cat on their ship to take care of the mice that were on the ship. Or maybe I have it reversed.
No, that might be right. It's been a long time. I remember that one being wild, though.
It is.
Should listen to some of these again, except I can't stand the sound of my own voice talking, which is a problem.
Does make it difficult.
When it is the voice telling the folktales.
I have an unorthodox question.
Okay.
Yes.
Does this count as a story?
The whole thing?
Yeah, everything that we just listened to.
Yes.
Like, what does a story make? How do we define a story?
Anything is a story.
Okay, well, that solves it.
Why is it not a story?
It's got a frame story, which is unnecessary. Like, mm-hmm. I would say a lot of frame stories end up being, I'm still mad at Wuthering Heights. Yeah, still mad at Wuthering Heights. That would have been a great book if they had not bothered with the frame story about boring man talks to interesting housekeeper in the middle of every, like, as action rises, talk good. Let's go back to boring man.
Just a quick check-in. How you doing, boring man?
Nothing? Cool. Great, I'm glad that we broke tension for this.
Glad we had that cool down. Let's get back to it.
Pointless frame story doesn't come back in the end.
No.
Like, if you're going to frame us both sides. Tell me more about Gilpin. He's just assuming that fucking Gilpin is related to this cool famous cat. My cat wiggles doorknobs, so he's probably a relative of cool famous cat.
He sounds like that cat that was wanted for numerous crimes.
He sounds like the crime cat who grew up to be Harry Potter.
She cut that part out of the book.
Yeah. Well,
or added it in later. I don't remember.
Out of the story or out of the Rowling book?
Rowling book. It's sort of post...
Yeah, it'll be in a tweet. Post-talk
cat representation in the book.
Yeah, it'll be in a tweet at some point when she's finished... For, like, a brief moment being terrible in other directions.
Sure.
She just was confused by the source material, like, what she was reading, and ended up making the old woman teach her a cat instead.
Yeah. Like, whoops. Turns out that was Peggy Poison.
Now under an assumed name.
Yeah.
So, why would this not be a story? Is my question, Tyler. Or whoever.
I feel like the problem I'm having is just the disjointedness between where we started and where we ended.
And that makes it not a story?
They're at odds with each other. And
go on.
I'm just trying to put my own thoughts into words now. So if you have something, go ahead.
Well, where it starts from, like, explaining who the hell Johnny from the title is and his cat a little bit. It has sort of a story thing. We see a beginning where he has cat that's normal. We have the, point of attack, which is cat had been with him for some years when strange thing occurred. Because that's kind of like an outside perspective thing, not an inciting incident thing. Inciting incident would be seeing the shadow with the gleaming fires. We have no refusal of the call going on here, so we just go straight in, and we don't really have a meeting with the mentor either. We're just going to skip a couple beats.
Do we need these things for a story?
We don't need these things. Not necessarily, no. For longer stories, they really help with, like, structural elements, like hitting pacing correctly. But they don't have to happen in a particular order, and some of them can be omitted.
I think I have landed on, like, what I'm struggling with.
Uh-huh.
And that is that it uses dream logic. And I don't mean that in the way that I usually use it, which is like, this is all nonsense. This is just goofy, weird stuff happening. But in that, like, the way that the story part of the story starts is this hyper focus on explaining to us why he's digging a hole in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Like, so much detail given to that. It never matters. We move on from it immediately, but it's like we needed to hyper focus on this setting.
So this is
almost like a dream would.
Yeah, so this would be an example of a really common pitfall in storytelling, which is unnecessary amounts of backstory, especially in the beginning. It's like, we gotta explain everything, because, you know, we sat down and we thought about everything that went into this character reaching this point, and therefore the audience needs to know all of these things. So we're gonna have a backstory info dump before we get to the action. And the thing is, we don't need to know. Like, the person who died does not come into play, unless that's Peggy Poison. But what does Kat have to do with that? Like, you gotta tie it all back in.
Like, it sounded like someone explaining a dream badly.
Yeah.
That they had had. Like, I was digging a grave, it was the middle of the night, this is the reason why I was digging the grave. Anyway, later on I met these cats, it was somewhere in between home and the grave, not really clear how much time had passed, but anyway, moving on. The cats, they were dancing, it looked like fire. I got a little closer. Clearly it's cats. Anyway, I heard a voice, and I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And then the cat started talking to me, yada yada.
Yeah, I mean, that's just...
That's still explaining a story.
Explaining a dream poorly and writing a story poorly are about the same thing. Like, there's still a story in there, it's just that the person delivering it has no idea what's interesting to the other party.
Yeah, and in the case of a dream, it's your own brain.
So, yeah, you gotta, like, if you're gonna tell somebody your dream, you gotta, like, edit out quite a bit.
I'm mad at my brain for telling me dreams this way.
It's like, why are you doing this? Yeah.
Like, I'm not the one that's telling the story bad. I'm relating exactly what was told to me.
I get very mad when I have a dream that feels like it's a really great story. And there's probably a nugget in there, but, like, I wake up feeling like, oh, man, I just dreamt of this amazing story. And then I start examining it, I'm like, wait, what?
This was terrible.
There was a school bus, like, we were there, and then we were over here at this other place, and then it was a Pixar movie, and you can't do shit with it.
Like, I'm just mad that my brain isn't better at it at this point.
My brain will sometimes hit on it correctly, where it can stay focused enough for an entire dream to mostly get there.
Like, you'd think after all this fucking time of thinking about stories and storytelling, my brain would just get with it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it just likes to fucking eat junk food still in the middle of the night.
It's like, here, have some potato chips mixed in with some M&Ms. Enjoy. Bye.
I think that all counts.
Yeah, it's story. It's just not a good story, and it's not a story that's telling anything to an audience, and because it doesn't conclude anything, it becomes a pointless story in the end. Like, oh, we don't know who Peggy Poison is. We don't know what happened to the cat. We don't really know what's going on here. Well, then why the fuck you tell us this?
I mean, all those things are bad, unless they're good. Like, these are all problems with stories, unless they're good in the story. And then it's good.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, all writing rules are guidelines.
I'm increasingly less interested in structure.
Well, you learned that rule about perspective, and so the entire world's falling apart. I remain very interested in structure.
I'm somewhere between being interested in structure and intent.
What do you mean by that?
Like, if you don't have one, you better fucking have the other.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you have to have something, but I think I'm just less interested in, like, a notion of what stories are supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I like thinking of that as the baseline from whence you can, like, stretch or squash certain things for certain effects. But if you know what you're starting with, then you know how to do, like, the breakaways a lot more effectively. Sort of like, in order to do cartoon drawing, you have to learn real anatomy first to do it well.
Ooh, I have to disagree. You need to know one weird trick that I can't tell you.
Well, for the rest of the world, not Gordy.
Yeah, for everybody else, maybe that's what you need to do. I would suggest
discover by accident a weird drawing trick.
But yeah, I'm with you, Tyler. I'm all for breaking the rules. Just do it with intent
and
awareness.
It is probable that this story does have that, and I just don't know what it is. Like, I have to give all these stories that benefit of the doubt because I am a man in 2022. I don't know what people of the day were concerned with or how this story may have benefited them. Maybe it was just a fun way to think about their cats because they were bored. And they just wanted to think about the interior lives of these little creatures that were mean to them.
I had to look up real quick T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, which has similar energy. That was 1939, so it was a little bit after this was recorded anyway. But apparently just a constant fascination we have with explaining cats in ways that ultimately explain nothing.
To present. Still haven't figured it out.
So maybe what this story is just pure cat energy in a tale. It goes all over the place. Gets wild in some places. Nothing happens in others.
There are sudden sprints that stop as soon as they started.
And then it goes to sleep.
And then it's a hairball.
Yeah. So, like, maybe this was just a stylistic exercise in capturing the energy of a cat in a story.
And in that sense, I think very successful.
Yeah, it makes no sense. We're there. Any final thoughts?
Can we define this art form?
The art form of, like, representing the essence of something?
Yeah, representing the essence of a thing through, like, an audible form, almost. I guess that's music, is what I'm describing.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, maybe there's a better all-encompassing term for when you're trying to do that thing specifically. Because there's, like, music that's composed to try and capture the essence of something. Like that album that's just the rivers of the United States. Mm-hmm. And then there's music that's composed to tell a story and music that's composed to just kind of see what you can do with instruments. So yeah, maybe it'd be worth defining art by intent in some cases.
And like specifically what we're saying is like, this isn't supposed to make you feel like a cat. You're supposed to listen to this and, like, in your bones just feel cat. Like, almost, your brain should almost register it as if you had just seen a cat instead of heard a story.
I'm trying to, like, combine the words impressionism and essence in my head into a single portmanteau. Impressionism. Yeah, it's really hard to say. Impressus. And yeah, I can't, I, like, my tongue just trips over.
Impressionism. It is fun to say.
Yeah. Someone who's better at controlling their mouth than I am can say that thing. So thank you, Millipedish, for suggesting this tale and becoming the fate I cannot escape, no matter how childishly, pointlessly I attempt to refuse control.
You made my brain exercise way too hard on a Sunday.
Yeah, now I need to go take a nap. Thank you all for listening to this tale. Thank you to everyone who has shared it around, forced their friends to listen, forced their enemies to listen.
All the better.
Yeah. Thank you to the people who support the show and who, like, fill our Discord with all kinds of fun facts and strange recommendations and delightful arts and things that they've been doing. Thank you to our top tier patrons, Pangea, Lucky, Lunon, Maxwell, Queen Savagery in Exile, Trickery Treats Mrs. the WT Folklore Anthology, Eirias, Midori, Baby Grandma, Becca, Lobster No Longer, Kelly, Haley, but like a second one now, Big Prince Want Dance, Awkward, Project Bird Fall Informant, Funky Little Strawberry, Lemur, Spaghetto Floating Around in a Duck Pond, Caitlin, Danielle, New Fehu Dis, Olwen, Queen of Terrible Taste, Allie, Knife Dad, Cobus Cat, if you're having a tough time right now, I see you, I love you, I believe in you, and you are not alone, Versus Keeper of Too Many OCs, Pyrus, Nathan Lescott, Alex, Banjo Bug, Welcome to the Dave Zoo, 100 hectares of Dave in their natural habitat, all enclosures are the same as the first one, Maya, Gray Goetic Prince of the Arcane, Hylistus of Wimbus, an unforgivably yowie, a dubious little creature, Haley, Dominic, Justin, Lily, Izzy, and Jenna. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you always, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
We're What the Folklore, and that's how it works. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, da-ha-dee-da-ha-dee-ho. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have story suggestions for us, please send them to wtfolklore@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.